But let's not lie to each other, mon ami, Odette said above Celine's coughing. You don't wish to be rid of all men, do you?
I do.
Celine cleared her throat and wiped the tears from beneath her lashes.
They are nothing but a bother.
Odette wagged a finger at Celine.
Montouze, I see the way you look at Bastion.
She leaned closer, her expression sly. Knowing. Celine startled, her hand jostling her water goblet.
What are you...
She sat up, her heart hammering in her chest.
But how do I look?
Parched, mon ami. Like you wandered the desert for 40 years seeking the promised land.
I look thirsty.
Celine groaned, her cheeks reddening. A mixture of anger and embarrassment washed through her veins. She considered denying it, tried in vain to conjure a plausible explanation, then lifted her chin in defiance. Why should she have to lie?
Very well, Celine announced. I won't deny it. I'm attracted to Bastion. I think he's too beautiful to be real.
Odette clapped as if she had just heard the world's foremost soprano perform her favorite aria.
This is not my favorite thing you've ever said.
She proceeded to giggle in a way that reminded Celine of being a small girl. She didn't know anyone who giggled like that anymore.
Now,
Odette paused to tap an index finger along her chin.
What to do about this situation?
Nothing, Celine said determinedly. There is nothing to do.
I have no intention of pursuing anyone like Sébastien Saint-Germain, Odette, she warned. Nothing will come from your rather naked attempts to interfere. You know as well as I do that Bastien isn't a proper young gentleman.
And you require a proper young gentleman?
I do.
Celine nodded with conviction. Her expression dubious, Odette pursed her lips.
We'll discuss this later.
She shifted tack with the ease of a dancer.
Tell me what you think about my idea for the masquerade ball.
Grateful that Odette had changed the subject, Celine did not hesitate to reply.
I think you shouldn't go as Marie Antoinette.
I dare say there will be at least 15 other women dressed accordingly for the occasion.
Because it's expected.
I say you do something unexpected.
A shrewd gleam alighted her gaze. Don't go as the wife. Go as the mistress.
Pardon?
Odette let out a burst of laughter.
This, from the girl who requires a proper young gentleman?
Celine waved a dismissive hand.
Never mind that.
You should go as Madame du Barry.
Scandaleux!
Odette clapped gleefully.
The society matrons will be positively bug-eyed.
And it will be the dress no one forgets,
Celine promised.
I'll do it. But I must insist you accompany me to the masquerade ball, as well as another soiree I'm keen to attend.
Odette toyed with the silk ribbon around her neck.
Rumor has it the host,
a member of a new crew known as the Twelfth Night Revelers, plans to decorate his gardens after a Midsummer Night's Dream.
Though both ideas tantalized Celine with possibility, she shook her head.
I don't think that's wise.
Not even if Bastion is there in all his impropriety,
Odette winked.
Especially not if he's there.
Oh, don't be so difficult, mon ami.
Odette paused meaningfully.
You already admitted he's...
How did you say it?
Celine groaned, regret blooming in her stomach.
Too beautiful to be real.
Something clattered to the floor behind her. The blood drained from Celine's face in a sudden rush. She froze in her seat, her eyes wide. It took only a glance in Odette's direction to confirm the obvious. Sébastien Saint-Germain was standing behind Celine, listening to every word she had just said.
Je suis désolée.
Odette wrinkled her nose, clearly not sorry at all. Celine considered balling up the silk napkin in her hand and hurling it toward Odette's doll-like face. She reconsidered in the next instant. Although it might prove satisfying in the moment, it would do little to help her situation. Her pulse wreaking havoc through her body, Celine turned around and immediately wished she could shrink into nothingness. Bastian stood at the top of the curved staircase, as striking as ever, his Panama hat in hand. Flanking him were several members of Le Code de Lyons, each sporting varying degrees of amusement. Before anyone could speak, Arjun bent to retrieve his leather notebook, an apologetic expression on his face. If Celine had to guess, he had dropped it on purpose. She tamped down a flare of gratitude. He'd dropped the notebook too late, that traitor. A hero was only a hero if he managed to save the damsel in time. Mortified, Celine stood at once, the legs of her gilded chair catching on the plush carpeting, her salmon-striped skirts a tangle about her feet. Gritting her teeth, Celine allowed her embarrassment to mushroom into anger. She curled her hands into fists and lengthened her neck so she could peer down at the recent arrivals with unmistakable disdain. One of the elegant women with the rings laughed.
Comme une reine des ténèbres.
Like a queen of darkness. Easy laughter rippled around the room. Bastian kept silent, his gunmetal eyes unflinching, his handsome features unreadable. Celine's heartbeat drummed in her ears like the wings of a hummingbird. It would not do for her to appear weak. She would never be able to show her face again in this place if she succumbed to mortification. Her fists gripping the striped fabric of her gown, Celine nodded once. Hello? In response, Bastian bowed low, his hat held out at his side. When he stood once more, the suggestion of a smile played across his lips.
Good evening,
he said, his voice silken, sinful. Celine wanted to stomp her foot and flee, to scream like a banshee, loud enough to damage her own hearing.
Bonsoir, Bastian, Odette replied with a simpering grin.
Before another word could be spoken, the carved long-case clock along the wall began tolling the hour in furtive tones, its weighted brass pendulum swinging back and forth. The interruption afforded Celine the perfect opportunity.
I'm afraid I must be going.
She pushed past the table, her face flushed.
Not yet.
Odette stood, her sable eyes round, beseeching.
You must at least taste the île flottante.
Floating islands?
It's a dessert Casimir has been keen to add to the menu. We were to be among the first to try it. Clouds of perfect meringue floating in a decadent sauce of crème anglaise.
Celine smiled sadly. While that sounds heavenly, I'm afraid the hour is late. My friends at the convent will worry. Odette pouted, tucking a brunette curl behind an ear.
Then at least wait while I go for the carriage.
No,
Celine replied, straightening her skirts, keenly aware of their audience.
I'll be fine. It's only a few blocks to the convent.
I'm afraid I must insist, Odette countered. You simply can't walk home alone, not after everything that's happened recently.
Frustration gripped Celine's stomach. She needed to leave now. Very well, then. I'll hail a hired conveyance.
But that's not necessary, Odette protested. Not when Odette,
Celine said through gritted teeth. Thank you so much for the wonderful meal and the consummate hospitality. I'll find my own way home.
I can't in good conscience.
Let her be, Odette.
Bastian interrupted softly, the sound of his voice causing Celine to stiffen where she stood.
Tu ne peux pas tout contrôler.
Odette moved from her side of the table.
Mais Bastian, elle ne...
I'll be fine, mon ami, Celine said with another smile.
Please tell Casimir the meal was a work of art. I'll begin fashioning your gown for the masquerade ball immediately. Feel free to send the bolts of fabric and all the supplies to the convent first thing tomorrow. With that, Celine lifted her chin and made her way toward the stairs leading to the first floor of Jacques. The members of Le Coeur de Lion, who had stood silent and watchful throughout the entirety of this humiliating exchange, moved aside to grant Celine leave, though she could feel their eyes following her as she descended the steps, Boone inhaling deeply as she passed by. Her hands trembled in her skirts, but she did not falter. She was a mountain, a tower, a 100-year-old oak in the... Behind her, soft laughter rose into the coffered ceiling.
Damn them all to hell.
Meet your maker. Celine regretted the decision to walk home the instant after she made it. Less than a block from Jacques, every shifting shadow and unfamiliar sound caught her attention, heightening her awareness, lending itself to a creeping kind of fear. If only the court could see the Queen of Darkness now. It was Celine's pride that wouldn't allow her to admit she lacked the means to hire a hack. And it was her arrogance that forbade her from taking anything else from Odette, or Bastien, or any member of La Croix de Lyons. But now that the fervor over recent events had subsided, regret unfurled down Celine's spine. She'd been too hasty. She should have taken advantage of the offered carriage instead of allowing her pride to get the better of her. Celine sighed to herself. No, it wasn't just her pride. She was simply tired of being told what to do. Steeling herself, Celine decided to let the beauty of a New Orleans evening distract her from her thoughts. A balmy breeze riffled through a magnolia tree to her left, its downy white blossoms swaying in the sultry wind. The breeze coiled closer, carrying with it the sweet perfume of honeysuckle and lavender, the tiny flowers peeking from between the tines of a wrought iron fence in front of a stately four-storied mansion. Overhead, wraparound terraces and hanging baskets overflowed with waxy vines and brightly colored blossoms. A row of blue cypress trees dripped with Spanish moss, forming layers of scent and shadow. Somewhere in the distance, an unseen man with a beautiful voice began to sing, his words a mixture of French and something Celine could not quite discern. In only a few short weeks, Celine had learned to appreciate how the city seemed to come alive the moment the sun dipped below the horizon. Not a normal kind of alive, like sunshine and laughter, but a sinister, sensual kind of alive. A warm caress and a cool whisper. Despite everything, Celine found herself falling a little bit in love. As she continued making her way toward the convent, footsteps shifted in line behind her, clear and crisp against the blue-gray pavestones. Heavy footsteps, like those of a man. Celine listened as they drew near, then straightened her spine. There was no reason to fear the person at her back. Pedestrians took to the streets of the quarter at all hours of day and night. It was irrational to think this might be anyone or anything else. Nevertheless, she could not help but be reminded of that awful night in the atelier when her naivete had betrayed her, changing the course of her life. Celine turned onto the next street. The footsteps lingered in her shadow. Fear prickled the nape of her neck, that feeling of being followed. She refrained from turning to confront the man, lest she appear foolish for the second time in a single evening, or, worse, provoke him into taking action. Instead, she decided to conduct a test. She slowed her pace to a leisurely stroll, expecting the pedestrian to pass by. He did not. Instead, he too slowed his footsteps to match hers. Celine fended off a wave of panic, her memories of that terrible evening taking flight in her mind. She glanced about without moving her head and looking to see who might be around her. A lone gentleman strolled on the opposite side of the street, his walking stick striking the pavers, his gaze focused on the path before him, heedless of all else. Would he bother to help her? For an instant, Celine considered dashing across the lane and coming to stand alongside him, irrespective of these concerns. Then she made out the sounds of a parade in the distance, a place in which countless people undoubtedly gathered. She decided to speed up in order to make her way toward the crowd, no matter that it was in the wrong direction of the convent. The footsteps behind her stopped mid-stride. Then Celine swore she heard something take to the wind in a flutter of leaves, the sound clattering against the bars of an iron balustrade. Panic taking hold, Celine halted in her tracks. Dared to look over her shoulder? Nothing was there. Her heart dropped into her stomach, its beat thundering loud and hard through her body.
"Celine," a voice whispered behind her, a voice of nails grating across slate. Fear lanced through her, keeping her immobile for an instant. Then she whirled around to find nothing. "Mama Moa," it rasped at her back, its words an icy brush against her skin.
"You smell divine. Come with me to the heart of Chartres. Die in my arms."
Celine lifted her skirts and ran, her feet racing above the gray pavestones. She sprinted to the nearest corner, rounding it, her teeth chattering in her skull. Footsteps battered against the walkway behind her, then dissolved in a rustle of dried leaves. She continued running toward the noise of the parade in the distance, refusing to stop until she reached the crowd. A hand shot from behind an alcove to her left, grabbing Celine by the arm, yanking her from her intended path, causing her to nearly stumble. Celine screamed, forcing every bit of air from her lungs. A cool palm covered her lips, bidding her silent. Then strong arms shoved her behind a wall of bergamot-scented muscle. "Bastien!" Positioning himself before her, Bastien leveled his revolver into a fall of darkness beneath a nearby awning. A strange muttering could be heard in its depths, almost like the chittering of insects or the gnashing of teeth.
"Begone,"
Bastien said, his words punishing in their precision.
"Or stay and meet your maker, for I'll grant you no quarter."
Celine pressed her face into his shoulder, her fingers digging into his back. The chittering ceased, the cloaked creature scuttling up the side of the building, before vanishing into the night. For a beat, Celine and Bastien stood there unmoving, their bodies tensed, their breaths rising and falling in tandem. Then Bastien turned toward her, his expression cut from stone as he holstered his gun. Something within Celine was on the brink of shattering. Her legs felt boneless. Her body felt stretched thin. Energy pounded through her veins, causing her hands to shake. Bastien's fingers tightened around her arms at the exact moment Celine's legs started to give. He held her in place, his gaze locked on hers. Her vision hazy. Celine blinked, then exhaled slowly.
"Celine?"
Bastien said, his voice soft. "Careful." She nodded. "I'm fine." Celine continued staring at Bastion's face, tracing its lines in an effort to calm herself, her throat dry, the words a jumble on her tongue. "How did you... I mean, you don't need to..."
"Celine,"
Bastien said again. Tentatively, he shifted a hand to the side of her face. She kept still, though she wanted to lean into his touch.
"Tout va bien?"
he asked quietly, brushing his thumb along her cheek in a soothing caress. Celine nodded. But please, stay.
I will.
Something glinted in his gaze.
I promise.
What? What's that?
She whispered. He hesitated, his thumb grazing the edge of her lips.
Don't lie to me, she said softly.
I'm tired of all the lies.
He inhaled through his nose.
It was...
He searched for the right words.
Something inhuman, Celine finished.
Bastien considered her for a moment, then nodded.
Did that thing kill Annabelle?
Celine asked.
I can't be certain.
It's possible. His words seemed to ring of truth. Or maybe Celine simply wished to believe him. To dismiss the yellow ribbon. To ignore logic and listen to the whispers of her heart. Fickle little fool that it was.
It knew my name. Told me to come with it to the heart of Chartres.
Celine shuddered.
It asked me to die in its arms.
A trace of rage rippled across Bastien's face.
It's gone now.
It might come back.
I'll find it first.
Bastien's fingers slid down her face, his palm framing her chin. His features took on a dangerous edge, his steel-flecked eyes bright and intense. He looked vicious,
like an avenging angel
or a demon from hell. Celine wrapped a hand around his wrist. The way he spoke in this moment, the way he gazed at her, should have frightened her. But it didn't. Instead, Celine bowed into his caress, tightened her grip around his wrist, the creature in her blood restless, feverish. Bastien bent closer, his breath a cool wash across her skin, his lips close enough to touch, to nip, to taste.
He was going to kiss her.
She was going to kiss him back. And, for a blink of time, nothing else would matter. A pair of footfalls across the street shattered their reverie. A well-dressed couple around her father's age had stopped in their tracks, pausing to stare at Bastien and Celine, their expressions filled with shared disapproval. All at once, Celine's sense of propriety returned. She knew why the other pair looked upon them with such disdain. To anyone passing by, Bastien and Celine appeared to be two young lovers caught in a passionate embrace on a darkened street corner. Unknowingly, Celine's fingers had twisted around the fine fabric of Bastien's waistcoat, as if to tug him closer. The palm of Bastien's free hand was pressed against the small of her back, dragging her against him. She felt the heat of him through her bodice, through her skirts, felt it caress past her skin, into her soul. Wanton, sinful, perfect. With a gasp, Celine pushed away. Bastien's fingers fell from her throat. He stepped back. The fire in his eyes faded the next instant, replaced by amused indifference. Celine swallowed, gripped by a sudden despondency.
Thank you for coming to my aid this evening, Monsieur Saint-Germain.
Bastien nodded.
Of course.
He rubbed a palm against his neck, pausing to check his pulse for reasons Celine could not begin to fathom. Straightening, stiffly, she looked about, seeking her own distraction. A few short blocks away, the noise of the carnival rose in her ears, the revelry drawing closer with each passing second.
We should make our way back to the convent,
Bastien said above the rising din. Celine nodded in agreement. But unease took hold of her at the thought of marching through the darkened corridors of the Ursuline convent, of trying to fall asleep amid its lurking shadows. She could not be alone right now, though she refused to say it aloud.
I appreciate your offer to accompany me to the convent, Celine said, her voice shaken by uncertainty.
Bastion's expression softened.
Her heart stuttered when he moved toward her, only to catch himself mid-step.
Would you rather walk someplace else first? Perhaps a nearby cafe for some coffee or a cup of tea?
He asked, his tone bordering on formal. Celine hated to hear the distance in his words. Another wash of inexplicable sadness hollowed through her. How she wished she could ask him for what she truly wanted. How she wished she could admit it to herself. The creature inside her rattled its cage, demanding to be released. As if to mock her further, raucous laughter pealed in the distance, its echo cheerful, unencumbered. Celine resented it greatly. More than anything, she wanted to feel as free as that ribbon of laughter, to remember what it felt like to feel safe in her own skin. Darkness wrapped around her like a shroud, reminding Celine of her truth. How could she dare to wish for such a thing? She'd killed a man and run away, flouting French law. If the truth ever came to light, she could be hanged for it.
Did a murderess deserve to feel free? A new strain of music unraveled into the sky. Its melody bright, effervescent. It beckoned to Celine, all but making the decision for her. Still, she hesitated.
Then, as if he could read her mind, Bastian said,
"Perhaps we should venture in the direction of the parade and walk with the crowd for a few minutes."
Celine nodded,
the gratitude plain on her face. Maybe a girl destined for the gallows didn't deserve to feel free. To drown her dark sorrows in something light.
But neither did any young man who tried to force himself on a young woman.
And Celine still wasn't sorry for what she had done.
Méfiez-vous de Rougarou.
The crowd pulsed around Celine and Bastian, ebbing and flowing like a capricious tide. Cheers and wild laughter suffused the air, putting to rout the worst of her fears. Celine's pulse thrummed beneath her skin, her blood rising in a heady rush. If she closed her eyes, she could almost feel as if she were floating with the crowd, being carried on an errant wave. She'd never experienced a more welcome distraction. Bits of colored paper rained down around them, collecting in Celine's hair and against Bastian's skin before littering the ground. Music pounded into the sky, brass trumpets blaring, screeching through the night as if their joy could not be contained. Revelers gathered beneath eaves and along street corners festooned with vibrant streamers, many with their hands or arms linked, all sense of propriety lost beneath the light of the crescent moon. A papier-mâché tableau car trundled down the lane, moving at a snail's pace. Men clothed in jackets trimmed with golden epaulets, as if they were foot soldiers in Napoleon's army, laughed as they threw coins, painted buttons, and wooden beads into the crowd.
Each of Celine's senses were aflame.
The sweat and the smell of overturned earth mixed with powdery clouds of sugar to form its own unique fragrance. She soon found herself caught up in the commotion, her fears further dulled by the sight of the ongoing spectacle. She whirled around, stepping back when members of a dancing troupe bearing torches pressed through the center of the crowd, their skirts spinning in a blur about their slender bodies. Shirtless, barrel-chested men with waxed mustaches and scandalously tight trousers performed acrobatic tricks in the middle of the street. The chaos of the crowd threatening to separate them, Celine reached for Bastian's hand without thought. He threaded his fingers through hers as if it were natural. As if the only thing that made sense amid the confusion was the touch of his skin to hers. Celine drew alongside Bastian, her eyes wide open, a smile threatening to take shape on her face. Swallowed by the sea of moving bodies, they were soon carried past a narrow alleyway, where a young,
well-dressed couple shared an ardent kiss in the shadows, as though they were the only two souls in existence, her fingers winding through his hair, his hands gripping her hips. Her cheeks flushing, Celine averted her gaze. It was wrong to watch something so intimate, to watch them, to want to be them.
Faites attention! A man yelled as the crowd made a sudden surge.
Nom de Dieu!
Celine cursed, as she almost collided with a stout man clutching an empty bottle of port. Bastien pulled back in a seamless motion, spinning them about, away from the budding confusion. Before they could take in a breath, three young women turned the corner, pulling short a hair's breadth from Bastien and Celine. Blue ostrich feathers fanned about their heads, their wide belts fashioned of satin and sparkling beads in an array of rainbow colors, their skirts constructed of layers of translucent tulle. Fabric rosettes covered the centers of their breasts. The rest of their pale skin was bare. Bastien laughed as the women harumphed at a stunned Celine, rounding her with ease.
Faites attention, he whispered in her ear, his tone teasing.
She glanced over her shoulder, armed with a retort, when a tall figure wearing a terrifying mask lunged for them, the fur around its face trembling, its walnut shell claws nearly grazing their shoulders. Celine stifled a cry as she stepped back into Bastien, who wrapped a steadying arm around her waist. The man in the furred mask angled his head to the sky, bayed once.
Méfiez-vous de loup-garou!
He drew out the last word into another howl, then spun about in an awkward dance. Celine's eyes went wide. Though her heart still pounded, a smile tugged at the edges of her lips. Bastien laughed, then bowed at the masked man, who proceeded to lope in another direction.
Beware the... What did he say?
Celine tilted her head, struggling to be heard over the commotion.
The Rougarou.
Celine blinked.
What is a Rougarou?
She asked loudly.
A creature of darkness, meant to instill fear in the hearts of children.
Bastien sent her a light-hearted grin, his gaze glittering.
Half man, half wolf, it prowls the swamps and forests beneath the light of the moon, hunting for its next kill.
Though he spoke in obvious jest, Celine could not ignore the strange pull in her stomach. Something inhuman had attacked her less than half an hour ago. The worst of her nightmares had become very real possibilities. Was this a creature of fact or fiction? Bastien's features softened with understanding.
Don't worry. A Rougarou exists only in our imagination.
And in your imagination, what does it kill?
She asked carefully.
Bad Catholics.
A rush of unexpected laughter burst from Celine's lips.
You can't be serious.
He peaked a brow.
Make sure you keep all your promises during Lent.
He leaned close, electrifying the skin beneath her ear, sending a chill from her neck down to her toes.
Or méfiez-vous de Rougarou.
Celine laughed again, shoving him away.
Regardez!
A throaty voice commanded nearby. Bastien and Celine followed the directive, turning to look to one side. Four elderly women with dark skin stood in a semicircle, the eldest at its center waving a hand in Bastien's direction.
C'est un beau diable,
she declared, the other women around her chortling in response.
Do you not agree?
She asked Celine. Celine answered with a humorless nod. Bastien was indeed a beautiful devil. The lady held out her wrinkled hands.
Dance with me, beau diable,
she ordered Bastien. Without the slightest hesitation, he swept her up in his arms as the beat of a festive quadrille blared into the night sky, the drums and violins soaring in tandem. Soon other couples joined in, until a small corner of the street moved in a familiar pattern, changing partners, weaving in and out of each other like the reeds of a basket coming together. Celine found herself pulled into the melee, brushing past hands and shoulders, flashing around, blurring faces, the sweat dripping from her brow, the hem of her salmon-striped skirt kicking up a whirl of red dust around her feet. When the quadrille ended, a new melody quick to take its place, Celine laughed loudly and clapped with the dispersing crowd. Then she glanced across the way to find Bastien watching her, a strange look on his face. They held each other's gazes as they all but collided in the center of the street. "You dance well," Celine said with an awkward smile.
"As do you?"
She made a face. "I was a bit uncertain about the steps. There haven't been many occasions for me to dance."
"We should remedy that."
Bastien brushed the settling dust from his shoulders.
"And dancing well isn't about knowing the steps. It's about knowing yourself."
"That's a bit trite, don't you think?" His lips pushed forward.
"Trite? Why would it be trite to know oneself?"
"I only meant... do we ever truly know ourselves?"
"I should hope so. Knowing who you are is necessary in order to determine who you want to be."
Bastien looked to Celine for cues on where to proceed. Without a word, she began winding through the fringes of the crowd, moving in the direction of the convent, reassured by the feeling of his palm against the small of her back. Once they'd cleared the parade, Celine shifted beside Bastien, at ease for the first time since leaving Jacques, when her chief concern had been the recent humiliation she had suffered at Odette's hands. Celine almost laughed at herself. To think that had happened less than an hour ago. But none of it mattered now. Not much, at least. Her fingers no longer trembled. Her ribs no longer constricted her heart. She didn't yet feel entirely safe, but at least she no longer felt afraid. And she was thankful. For the length of the next city block, Celine considered the last thing Bastien had said. "If knowing who you are is a necessary part of knowing who you will become, then who are you, Sebastien Saint-Germain?" He snorted.
"I should warn you. Turnabout is fair play."
Celine paused in deliberation. "Tonight, I agree. From this point onward, let's deal only in truths."
"And tomorrow?"
"We'll return to cloaking ourselves in comfortable lies." Bastien laughed, the sound rich and resonant.
"Very well, then. Who am I?"
he mused.
"I'm... a man."
Something glinted in his gaze. Celine eyed him sidelong, her expression sardonic.
"I'm the son of people from different worlds,"
he continued, his smile lingering.
"My mother was a free woman of color, and my father was Taino."
He paused.
"For too short a time, I was also..."
A shadow crossed his face.
"A brother. After I lost my family, I became a nephew. My uncle brought me back to New Orleans at the age of 9, and I lived here until I was sent to the academy, where, barring a rather unfortunate incident, I almost became a soldier."
A hint of bitter amusement touched his lips.
"Now I handle my uncle's affairs when he is away on business."
He raised a shoulder.
"I suppose that's the whole of it."
Celine refrained from calling him out. Bastien may not have told any falsehoods, but he'd obfuscated the truth, distilling the whole of his life down to nothing more than a few particulars. A fount of questions gathered in her throat. Michael's admonition from days earlier rang through her mind, spurring her to press Bastien for details so that she might understand the full extent of the ghost's unhappy tale. She chose to ignore this desire. It would be easier to take on those concerns tomorrow than bear their weight tonight.
"You can ask me, Celine," Bastien said. After all, Michael didn't tell you everything.
Caustic humor laced his words.
Of course he didn't. I'm certain it hasn't escaped your notice how much he hates you.
The feeling is most assuredly mutual.
His grin reeked of arrogance.
May I ask why?
You may, but I may not answer, since I promise not to lie.
Celine's lips were caught between silence and speech for an instant.
Very well, she grumbled. For what it's worth, Arjun is a wretched spy.
He snorted.
As well as an excellent attorney.
For fiends and scoundrels alike.
She paused. But, in all seriousness, what happened to your family?
This, at least, she wished to know in this moment.
A look of blank apathy settled onto his beautiful face.
My mother died 6 months after my sister. Following their deaths, my father took me from New Orleans to Saint-Domingue. He fell ill soon thereafter, so we moved to his home in San Juan.
And how did your sister die?
She was killed in an accident, at the age of 15.
Though Bastian's reply sounded indifferent, his features hardened for an instant, anger flashing behind his eyes before his artful mask slipped back into place. There was a story there, a source of immense pain. But Celine did not wish to press Bastian on the matter, not yet.
My father succumbed to his illness a short while later, after which I returned to New Orleans, he finished.
An invisible hand gripped Celine's heart in a vice. It troubled her how Bastian spoke about loss in such a matter-of-fact tone. Perhaps that was how he talked about things that truly mattered to him, in cold, detached fashion.
I've heard many people say tragedy shapes us, Bastian continued. But I am not the worst thing that's ever happened to me. Nor am I the worst thing I've ever done. Nothing in life is that simple.
He looked across the darkened streets of New Orleans, his gaze steady, determined. His words were like a blow to Celine. Every day she denied parts of herself, tried to hide the worst thing that had happened to her, the worst thing she'd ever done. Her entire life she had denied who her mother was, as if it were some kind of great shame. Because of this, she knew nothing about half her past, half of her own story. Since the age of 4, she'd been told this was the only way. Do you ever wish you could be someone else? Celine asked, her tone solemn.
Often, especially when I was a boy.
Bastian turned toward her.
And you?
Celine blanched.
Don't lie to me.
Bastian repeated her earlier words.
Tonight, we deal only in truths.
Which is difficult, since my whole life is built on a lie.
It was honest.
More honest than Celine had ever been with anyone in her life. She breathed in deeply through her nose.
My mother was from a Far Eastern country. I was never told which one. But I am of mixed heritage from a marriage of East and West, Celine blurted, almost as if her own admission startled her.
I've never said that to a soul,
she finished in a rush. And yet the words fell from her lips with surprising ease. Bastian studied her while they walked. Whatever his thoughts were, he concealed them well. Her head remarkably cool, Celine trained her eyes on the gray pavestones ahead. When my father and I came to Paris, I was very young. He told me to keep who my mother was a secret. He said if the world knew, I would live with derision for the rest of my life, so I listened. And I lied. And I feel ashamed for it.
It's as if this lie has become an essential part of my truth, like a kind of twisted keystone. So much so that I don't know how to... She struggled for a moment. How to think or behave any differently, lest the whole thing crumble to pieces.
There. Several painful truths unmasked. Truths she had been incapable of admitting even to herself. It surprised her that, of all the people she'd encountered thus far, she'd decided to share these truths with Bastion. Celine waited in silence for a time, pondering this realization, wishing she could ignore the meaning behind it.
I'm sorry for your pain, Celine, Bastion said in a subdued tone. Thank you for trusting me with your truth.
A sharp twinge cut through her chest, making it difficult to respond at first. Finally, Celine spoke, her voice a soft brush of sound. And I'm sorry for your pain, Bastion. I think trust is a precious thing. Know that I will always treat yours as such.
He looked at her, his eyes a liquid silver.
Merci, mon coeur. From my heart to yours.
They walked the rest of the way toward the Ursuline convent with nothing accompanying them but the chirping of insects and the whispering of palm fronds. Once they rounded the final bend, the convent looming tall in the darkness, Celine tilted her head toward the lace of stars around the sickle moon, their cool light surging through her veins. Bastion stopped beside her, though he did not follow her gaze.
Are the stars that captivating?
He teased in a gentle tone.
Of course they are, she said, without looking away. They are infinite. They see all and know all. These same stars hung in the sky during the times of Michelangelo and Shakespeare. Isn't that fascinating?
Bastion sighed, the sound grim.
I'll never understand the fascination with the infinite. There is an end to everything, to good things as well.
Chaucer was an ass.
Celine glanced at him, a brow quirked with amusement.
And the infinite captivates us because it allows us to believe all things are possible.
That true love can last beyond time. He did not reply. Instead, his eyes bored into hers, the lashes above them thick, deliciously sooty. When Celine looked away, Bastion cleared his throat, pausing to check his pulse.
You did it again, Celine said.
What?
You often check your pulse. I'm curious as to why.
A sardonic smile took shape on Bastion's face.
To remind myself I'm human.
That same strange feeling gripped Celine again. That feeling of something eluding her grasp. Something important. Before she could stop herself, she asked,
Are you?
Her question caught Bastion off guard. He stared down at her, his perfect lips pushing forward with slow deliberation. Then he took her hand and pressed it to the side of his neck. Beneath Celine's fingertips drummed a steady heartbeat, one that began to race at her touch, its warmth tingling through her body. Bastion held both their hands there for a time, aware his pulse betrayed him. Aware, and seemingly unconcerned. The heart doesn't lie, Michael had said. Celine let her shaking hand fall and decided to ignore all common sense. Since we are dealing in truths for this one night, I wanted to say I'm attracted to you.
And I'm attracted to you.
Bastion did not hesitate in this admission. She stared up at him, her eyes unflinching.
Earlier this evening, I wanted to kiss you.
I've wanted to kiss you since the night we first saw each other in Jackson Square.
You remembered, she murmured.
I thought you had forgotten. Bastian canted his head.
How could I forget? You surprised me. It had been a long time since anything surprised me.
Celine blinked. I surprised you? He laughed. Then his expression turned serious.
One day, someone should tell you how beautiful you are in the moonlight, Bastian said softly.
Heat pooled in Celine's stomach, licking through her chest, rising into her throat. Someone should. She swallowed. But I don't think it should be you.
I agree.
Again, Bastian did not hesitate. Don't fall in love with me, she warned again, her words breathless. You're not good for me, and I'm not good for you.
I agree on all counts.
Most likely, you require a young woman with wealth and pedigree, an established place in society, Celine continued. And I require a proper young gentleman. The angles in Bastian's face sharpened, betraying a spark of emotion too slight to discern.
Correct on all counts, he said. You lack the right pedigree.
A half-smile curved up his face.
And I am not a gentleman.
Nevertheless, I appreciate what you did for me tonight, more than words. And in the future, Celine inhaled. I would not be offended if you chose to maintain your distance.
I don't think that's necessary. If you agree, I believe we're safe being passing acquaintances.
Bastian paused as if he intended to say something more, then kept silent, his lips curling upward. But who wants to be safe? Celine banished the reckless thought from her mind and held out her hand. Thank you again. I will not forget your kindness.
You're welcome, mon coeur.
Instead of bending to kiss her hand, Bastian shook it, as he would an equal, his signet ring winking back at the stars. A wave of satisfaction rippled through Celine. Do passing acquaintances use such terms of endearment?
They do in my world.
She smiled through a flicker of sadness. Your world is beautiful, Bastian. I wish I could stay.
As do I.
With that, Celine slid her hand from his, the tips of her fingers lingering a beat longer than necessary. Then she turned toward the convent, surprised to realize it was possible to feel both gladdened and gutted in the same instant. The Witching Hour. From the corner of her eye, Celine watched their last candle begin to flicker and wane. Not yet, she silently implored. Please, not yet. Her tongue slipped between her teeth as she hastened her efforts, basting the pieces of lustrous fabric together in a race against the sputtering light. Just as she was about to reach the end of the seam, the door to Pippa's cell creaked open. A faint breeze blew through the space, snuffing out the flame before Celine could blink, swallowing her in sudden darkness. Oh, Pippa said, her petite figure silhouetted by a beam of moonlight. I'm terribly sorry about that. With her foot, she propped the door halfway open. But I come bearing gifts. She sidestepped into the room. Between her hands rested a simple wooden tray, laden with what appeared to be food and the stub of a candle in an old-fashioned brass holder. It took a moment for Celine's eyes to adjust to the blue darkness. Apologies are unnecessary, especially if you brought cheese. And ham, and Dijon mustard, as well as tea, a crust of warm bread, and a piece of fresh honeycomb I filched earlier from a hive of glorious bees, Pippa said triumphantly. Celine could almost hear Pippa smiling.
It was in these moments that she appreciated her the most. Philippa Montrose was sunlight and goodness, a honeycomb in her own right. Perhaps it sounded silly, but having a friend like Pippa helped Celine believe she was welcome in the eyes of decent society, despite everything that had happened in the last few weeks. Grinning, Celine pinned her needle to the shimmering white fabric and shifted back from her makeshift workstation to stretch her arms above her head. Briefly, she considered waiting to eat. It would be wise to take advantage of the tiny candle Pippa had finagled to finish the last bit of basting before retiring for the night. After all, a single week remained before the masquerade ball. Celine had never completed a gown in such a short amount of time, much less without assistance. But she was famished. She had already foregone dinner because she had been so consumed with her work. When Pippa had suggested they pool their meager rations of light to make them last longer, Celine was beyond appreciative of the gesture. Ever since arriving to the convent less than 3 weeks ago, she had lamented its dearth of oil lanterns. Once the sun had set, Celine had moved her things to Pippa's slightly larger cell, where Pippa had chosen to work on her watercolors, while Celine stitched by the light of their shared candle flames. Now Pippa bustled about the space, humming a familiar melody as she lit the short taper and positioned a stool in the center of the room, placing the tray on the seat to form a makeshift table. On the opposite side of the cell, Celine stepped back to survey her work. It pleased her how much she'd managed to complete in only 2 days. As soon as dawn had broken the past morning, she had consulted with a carpenter on Rue Bienville, who'd been recommended to her by the Mother Superior. After Celine explained how the Baroque-style panniers should look, extending sideways at each hip in an exaggerated fashion, the front and back silhouettes held close to the body, he suggested they use willow branches, as they would be light, pliable, and readily available. Perfect for constructing hoops that had been out of fashion for nearly a century. To Celine's immense pleasure, he'd assured her he would have a sample for her to test in 3 days' time. Celine had proceeded to pour herself into fashioning Odette's gown with a single-minded focus. It had helped distract her from the many unanswered questions spinning through her mind. The first time Celine had visited Jacques, she'd come to the conclusion that the members of Le Coeur de Lion were not ordinary humans. Of course, that knowledge raised the question. If they weren't exactly human, then what were they? Celine didn't have the slightest clue. Were they goblins or changelings? Witches or warlocks? Perhaps some kind of dark fairy or ephemeral sylph? These were among the more fanciful possibilities. The kind Celine borrowed from books or stole from stories she had heard as a child. It felt safer to believe they were tricksters like Puck, or fey gentry from a shimmering forest like Oberon and Titania. Safer to think that than believe they might be creatures so terrible, the worst of Celine's nightmares could never have conceived of them. After all, if magic was possible, anything was possible. The thought that alarmed her most was the likelihood that Le Coeur de Lion had something to do with Annabelle's murder. That Bastien intended to protect the culprit when he concealed the yellow ribbon. Or that he was, in fact, the culprit. Perhaps Celine lacked the stomach for the truth. Perhaps she wished to remain blissfully ignorant, a worry that disconcerted her all the more. Her mind a tangle of thorns, Celine ran her fingers over the pieces of cut fabric she had stacked in a neat pile atop Pippa's rope bed. What had begun this morning as nothing more than a list of measurements and bits of scattered muslin had transformed into the beginnings of a grand ball gown. Celine let her mind be consumed by the challenge. Welcomed the diversion. The next part of the project could prove to be the most difficult task she had ever undertaken. A portion of Odette's masquerade ball costume was intended to be a surprise. Thusly, Celine could not rely on her help to complete it. She would have to recruit assistance from elsewhere.
Perhaps Pippa would be a good option. Her frame was similar in size and shape to that of Odette, despite their disparity in height.
"Have you finished for the evening?"
Pippa asked, while clearing away the last of her watercolor accoutrements. Celine stretched again, a yawn tugging at her mouth.
"More or less."
"I've never seen anyone labor for such a long period of time without stopping. As if you would happily work well into the witching hour had you not been interrupted."
"It's true, I'm enjoying myself." Celine sent her a tired smile. "It's been quite a while since I've had the chance to create something so grand. The masquerade ball is barely a week away. Usually I have months to make a dress this intricate. It's fortunate Odette had in her possession a great deal of lace and beadwork for me to use."
She knelt before the makeshift table and poured a cup of tea for Pippa.
"I didn't see you earlier this afternoon. Did you go to the market with Antonia or to the milliner with Catherine?"
Pippa shook her head.
"I met Phoebus Devereux's mother for tea."
She stirred a drop of cream into her tea, the pale color swirling about the cup.
"I almost forgot about that," Celine said, as she daubed coarse grain mustard on a piece of bread, then layered slices of Gruyere and salted ham on top. "How was it?"
Pippa pursed her rosebud lips to one side.
"Odd. She said her son has been a bit ill these last 2 days. The doctors are struggling to determine what might be ailing him. Thankfully, he's on the mend. She wants me to meet with him soon. Phoebus will issue an invitation when he's well again."
"If all goes according to his mother's plan, how do you feel about being courted by him?"
Celine bit into the bread, savoring the sharpness of the mustard and the salt of the cheese. Pippa broke off a piece of honeycomb, letting the golden honey dribble into her tea while she considered how to respond.
"In all honesty, I'm more concerned about what will happen to me if I fail to find a match, when I can no longer reside in a convent without being a nun."
She licked the honey from her fingertips, her expression morose. Her friend's bleak honesty angered Celine.
"And if you didn't have to worry about such things? Would marrying a boy like Phoebus suit your sensibilities?"
"I suppose so. It would be nice to have something of my own. A space to draw, paint, play music. Be myself. The Devereux family appears to be of comfortable means."
Pippa paused.
"I would be well cared for if I married Phoebus, should he choose to ask."
Resignation tugged at the edges of her lips. Celine sipped her tea, wishing she could speak plainly about how much this situation troubled her. That a girl as wonderful as Pippa would have to forego her desires in order to have comfort and protection.
"I suppose this all sounds reasonable and prudent and disheartening," she added to herself.
"I know this frustrates you."
Pippa paused again in consideration.
I don't have the temperament to wait and hope for something better. I worry all the time what will happen to me. Even reasonable goals can be unattainable when you're a young woman without prospects," she said simply, the light dulling in her eyes.
"I learned this back home in Yorkshire, when it became clear that no amount of effort on my part or the part of my mother could atone for my father's failings."
Atonement. A concept that also haunted Celine of late. "Do you think it's possible your father could ever atone for his sins? To me or to God? To you?" Pippa didn't reply, a frown settling into the lines of her face, as if the thought troubled her. Celine took in a careful breath.
"I suppose I'm asking if it's possible for anyone to truly atone for their sins.
To ask for forgiveness and truly be forgiven." For a beat, Pippa lingered in contemplation.
"For quite some time now, I've thought sin isn't as black and white as they'd like us to believe,"
she replied in a pensive tone.
"I suppose there are times in which sin lies in the eyes of the beholder."
"When we first met, I would not have thought you capable of saying such a thing."
Is that a compliment or an insult?
Pippa grinned good-naturedly.
It's a compliment.
I'm thankful you feel comfortable sharing such thoughts with me. Celine chewed at the inside of her cheek.
Perhaps you're right.
Perhaps what one might consider a sin, another might consider survival.
Like when Jean Valjean stole a loaf of bread to feed his family in Les Miserables.
Pippa nodded in agreement, then prepared a ham and cheese tartine for herself. An easy silence settled between them as they finished their midnight meal. Just as Celine swallowed the dregs of her lukewarm tea, Pippa angled her head to one side.
Celine, there's something I've been meaning to say to you for quite some time. I might muck it up, but I hope you'll bear with me while I try.
Celine stopped.